What's up, Lineup Logic? It's RotoJuan, Mike Alexander, here with a new segment I'm calling Key Decisions. I want to take a look at some of the key spots in your decision-making process for your Week 16 DFS lineups. Try to streamline things, not give you just an overload of information. You guys have great process. You do a ton of research. I see it in the Slack chat all the time. So you don't need me to go through and give you every tidbit about every single player. And there's plenty of shows out there that do that. So I wanted to give you something that'll, I think, be effective and help out making lineups that are going to be winning for you guys. So first spot that is going to be critical this week is running back one. Who are we paying up for? It's an interesting week. There's some tricky spots here. Off the top, you got Todd Gurley, game time decision. I don't think that the Rams are going to push their luck with Gurley. He's their golden boy. They need him in the playoffs, so he may see one quarter of work. I could see that happening as soon as they get the game under control. He's on the bike. He's sitting on the bench. So, unless you're really just looking to light a dollar on fire with the chance that Todd Gurley does Todd Gurley things, I'm probably not playing him this week. So then you got Zeke Elliott. He's had a really good season production wise. What hasn't been there for Zeke is the touchdown scoring, only six on the season. And you say only six in comparison to guys like Gurley. The Dallas offense has not been good at converting their production between the 20s into red zone production touchdowns. And that's what we need to have huge weeks. He's a great floor play. Their offensive line also has some issues there. Zach Martin is questionable. So then you got Saquon and Christian McCaffrey. Two guys in kind of opposite directions last week. Saquon disappeared in a spot that I really didn't think was possible. Only caught four balls for 25 yards. Didn't have a great rushing output. Didn't score any touchdowns. Was not his explosive self. Is that going to happen in his second week in a row? Probably not. My concern with Saquon, though, he's a rookie. The college football season is 12 games and maybe a bowl game, but you got plenty of time to heal up and prepare for that. So last week was his 15th game of the season. He's getting used in, a really high level of usage. It's something he's never done before. He's never played this many snaps. He's never handled the ball this many times. That's just, even for a freak like Saquon, physical freak, it's a challenge. So he may be experiencing some fatigue there, and that's cutting into his effectiveness. It wouldn't shock me if the final 2 weeks of the season, he's just not, the 40 plus yard run player that he's been. He can still score touchdowns. He's kind of the only thing in that offense. But attached to Eli, I don't know about Saquon this week. Not a bad bounce back spot to attack, given that people who got burned last week are probably going to stay off of him. And maybe it's a 1 week blip. And with CMC, he's playing like 100% of the snaps. He's a guy who had fragility concerns coming out of college. They limited his workload as a rookie because of those concerns, and now they're just going to give him this, league-leading usage. Like, that doesn't make sense to me to begin with. And Cam is now on the shelf. They're out of the playoffs. It doesn't make sense from a long-term viewpoint to keep using McCaffrey in that way. That doesn't mean that they're not going to, because NFL decision makers are not the most optimal decision makers. They may just say, you know what, roll him out there. He's the only thing we have. We don't want to lose to a division rival. But given that he had a day off here and that they probably need to consider, preserving him for future seasons, I could see a reduced workload. The one thing that could save him, though, is the passing. A backup quarterback in here, he may catch like 12 balls just because they're not gonna ask I forget his name, Heine something, to push the ball downfield and be aggressive. They're gonna say if it's not there, dump it to Christian. So, but out of that lot, my preferred play is gonna be Ezekiel Elliott. He's got passing work. He's got a rushing volume that's unmatched. So in a good spot against a Bucks defense that has really had a terrible season. They haven't been as bad against the pass lately, but a big part of that has been that they've gone with like their nickel and dime package a lot more prevalently. They're putting smaller guys that can cover receivers on the field to prevent the gashing that they've received in the passing attack. And that's turned into rushing production. Their defensive line has been nicked up all season, lost some key players at linebacker. So I think Zeke is a really good spot, especially if Zach Martin goes. I don't have an update on that, but I think Zeke is worth the price, especially in cash games. He's going to have some passing work. Hopefully he turns in at least one touchdown, which has been an issue for Dallas, as mentioned, but that's where I'm going there. So then the next spot, what do we do with Steelers Saints? It obviously is a great spot for offense. It's in the Superdome. Two offenses that are perfectly capable of putting up 30, 40 points. This could be an easy over. My concern is that neither of them have played that style recently. The Saints are barely breaking double digits lately. They put up 12 points last week. So they're back home. That is a plus, but I don't know that they're gonna want to push the issue. They're at home. Their defense is playing really well. They've fixed a lot in the secondary, a lot of their defensive issues. So, will they look to push it unless Pittsburgh goes up early? I don't think so. Same thing on the other side. The Steelers have quietly reduced their risk taking as well, especially on the road. We haven't really seen Road Ben where he's turned into a disaster, and I think the coaching has been a big part of that. They've realized some of his limitations, and handicapped him somewhat. It helps when you have James Conner, which they're not going to, so maybe that factors in. But on the Steelers side, you've got Juju Smith-Schuster, midweek groin injury, questionable game time decision. Like, that's the worst possible news. We get no idea. Can he run? Can he cut? Is it just a minor thing? Is he going to go out there and try and gut it out and be ineffective? We have no way of knowing. That would be a great spot against PJ Williams. I just don't know that you can put any stock, any trust into Juju. Antonio Brown getting Marshon Lattimore, and then Jalen Samuels really good in the passing game, not probably quite as good in the running game, may lose goal line work to Stephen Ridley as well. You could have touchdowns vultured. Samuels with the passing floor, I do kind of like out of all the Steelers. We'll talk about him in a little bit. But as far as the Saints Steelers go, yeah, I'm probably fairly gun shy on the Steelers side. And on the Saints side, it's just been too hard to predict who's going to be, getting the production. Is Drew Brees going to be reliable? We've seen in these games that he's not. They have a ton of options, a ton of weapons. The ball gets spread out. It always has. Michael Thomas had consolidated that to start the year because their secondary receivers were just a disaster. They're still kind of a disaster, but they've at least developed some chemistry with Brees, and he is moving the ball around a little more. And then you got two good running backs. Is it going to be Ingram? Is it going to be Kamara? This is probably a Kamara game, but that can't be a guarantee. His usage has definitely taken a hit with Ingram back. So for me, I'm not going to fade the game, but I'm probably going to look for one-off type players. Maybe Vance McDonald as a tight end. Maybe Tre'Quan Smith, something like that. Jalen Samuels, we'll talk about. And I'm not going to invest heavily in this game. It reminds me a lot of last week where everybody thought Patriots Steelers is the only game that's going to smash, and we got a really boring affair. So that could easily happen again. So next spot, running back two. Who are you going to use for somebody who you can save a little bit of money on if you're not going to be on team cram them in, which it's never a bad time to be on team cram them in. But, you know, we mentioned some of the high price guys do have some flags. Three guys down a couple thousand. You've got Jalen Samuels, who we were just talking about with the floor. I think he's in play. I like him a lot more as a cash option. You know, could turn in 5 to 8 receptions with a nice yardage total, maybe a receiving touchdown, and he's going to get some rushing work, you know, something around 10 carries probably. But upside, where's it at? Dalvin Cook, huge week last week, won some people big money. They're probably going to go right back to him. My issue with Dalvin Cook this week, they're on the road. The Lions, who they're playing, they've started to fix their run defense. They got Snacks Harrison. That was a big part of it. But I also think that Matt Patricia has asserted himself, his personality, onto this team on both sides. The offense, you know, is more conservative. They're not taking chances. Part of that is Stafford, you know, is nursing a back injury. But I think that's, you know, he's saying, I want to play the kind of football I played in New England. You know, I don't want to get into these shootouts. We're gonna play a tight football game. So the Vikings are happy to play that style as well. That just could lead to reduced scoring. And I also think the way to beat the Lions defense is by attacking them in the slot. The Vikings have Adam Thielen, who's an amazing slot receiver. You do have some question marks there with the new offensive coordinator. He only got 2 targets last week. You know, Cousins only threw the ball, I think, 21 times. So there are issues there. That Thielen is a boom-bust play, certainly. But if they were smart, they will attack through Thielen. And Diggs on the other side, too. He's beaten Darius Slay plenty in his career, so he's an option. That brings me to Nick Chubb. Since taking over, he has been a beast. The Cleveland offense, really, he keeps it rolling. You know, Baker Mayfield is the catalyst. You need a good quarterback to be a good offense. But Chubb has really been the consistent part of that offense. I mean, he put up 100 yards last week against a Denver Bronco defense that had not allowed a 100-yard rusher in a long time. Didn't score a touchdown, or otherwise a lot of people probably would have had him higher on their list this week. So I think him being just a hair above those guys, you get a really nice ownership. And, you know, the Bengals are just atrocious. That's a sinking ship. Their defense has given up. It's just, you know, that whole organization is the only organization that's been a bigger disaster than Cleveland. And Cleveland maybe is headed in the right direction. So they should win the Ohio Bowl here. So give me some Nick Chubb this week. Next spot, what wide receiver are we going to pay down for? There's a few guys here. You know, you got to make your lineup work. A lot of people this week are really looking into Robert Foster. He's come on for the Bills, basically had 100 yards receiving in 4 straight games, you know, a hair under it a couple, but he's a downfield threat. Josh Allen has a huge arm, and he's developed a rapport with him. You know, you can look at it two ways. They're playing the Patriots, which means that they may need to score some points, and that playmaking may continue. You can also look at it with the narrative that's well-worn that the Pats will take away your weapon. You know, they're going to focus on someone. Last time they played, I believe Stephon Gilmore shadowed Zay Jones because that's who they identified as the playmaker of the offense. I would expect that to be different this week. I would think Gilmore will match up with Foster and possibly limit his production. Not that Gilmore is some, you know, matchup that's like death for a receiver, but the extra attention added to the fact that these are both young guys in Foster and Allen, in an offense that is not known for production. You know, Allen's been out there creating with his aggressive play, but that's not really where the Bills want to be. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues this week against a Patriots defense that you can definitely put points up on, but one that's known to kind of excel at preventing the type of play that Buffalo is been getting the points off of. So some concerns for Foster there for me, but he's a good price, 4,900. Then you got Robbie Anderson, 4,500. He's had two good weeks in a row. Both he and Sam Darnold are back and healthy. The team doesn't have anything to play for, so they're, you know, a little bit more aggressive. The coaching staff's willing to let Darnold take some more shots downfield, and that's what Anderson is best at. But he brings no floor. You know, he's either going to catch a long touchdown and you're going to have a good week, or he's not and you're not. And more often than not, he doesn't. It's been lately that he's been good. The rest of the year has been really tough. If you're a Robbie Anderson owner outside of one or two games, you know, short tournament play. I actually really like him with a Sam Darnold stack, because Darnold's super cheap, 4,900. So that's not a bad spot to free up a lot of salary for the rest of your lineup. But again, not the, not the most consistent and reliable players there, which brings me to Josh Reynolds. Since Cooper Kupp, was injured the first time and the second time for the season, Reynolds has stepped in and played a full complement of snaps. He's kind of taken over the outside role from Robert Woods. Robert Woods plays the slot that Cooper Kupp kind of used to. So he's got a great ADOT, average depth of target. It's the second on the team. It's up in double digits. That's a really positive indicator. He hasn't caught a touchdown in a few weeks, but he's always in play, I think, to catch a touchdown, given that the Rams offense is a good offense. Don't forget that they had a couple of weeks of struggles. They're playing the Cardinals. You got Patrick Peterson on Brandon Cooks. That's probably a matchup to stay away from. Outside of that, I don't think the Cardinals are capable of doing anything. They're not going to score points on offense. I think this is a get right spot. The coaching staff is going to want Goff to really, get his confidence back, get his feet back under him here, and throw, at least 2-3 touchdowns. It's going to be a game that they're going to want to win and put away early. That could easily lead to Reynolds catching a touchdown or multiple touchdowns. He's getting targets. I think he had 12 targets last week. So it's the opportunities there. Yeah, 12 targets, 7 the week before, 5 the week before, 8 the week before that. So he's involved in the offense. A really good spot for Josh Reynolds. And out of those three guys, probably the lowest owned. So I like that as a tournament option. And let's wrap things up with tight ends. It wouldn't be an NFL week in 2018 without having to talk about what to do at tight end. Not the worst week on the main slate here. We lose Kelsey to the Sunday night game, and Jared Cook to the Monday night game, who've been a couple more popular and productive options. But you've got some guys at the top. George Kittle's there. He's the most expensive. I don't like Kittle as the most expensive tight end, but the target share is there. There's certainly an argument for that. But then you got Zach Ertz and Eric Ebron right below him. Ebron, a bounce back spot here. He's disappointed people recently with a pretty minimal performance last week. Coming against the Giants at home, I think that's a terrific spot to right the ship. They've been better against tight ends, the Giants have this season, but they still don't have the personnel to cover an athletic tight end. In my opinion, the Colts have made Ebron a focal point in the red zone. I think there's going to be plenty of opportunities there. And as long as he's, able to convert, not drop any passes, that will lead to solid production, possibly big production. They've got the cupboard is bare at tight end. Doyle out for the season for a while now. Their backups, Mo Alie-Cox, Eric Swope, missing time and inconsistent. So Ebron in a really good spot. But Zach Ertz, he's the second best tight end in football now that Rob Gronkowski is a zombie. Kelsey's still 1-1, but Ertz is right there. He hasn't got the volume the last couple of weeks since Nick Foles has taken over. I'm going to chalk that up to the offense just having to get into sync in general. I don't think it's a Foles discrimination thing, which is the narrative I'm seeing out there. You, as a quarterback, love a target like Zach Ertz. He's a guy that can get open. He can exploit matchups. He's big. He's fast. Great hands. Reliable. He's your best friend. You know, I think the opportunities were just there to take shots to Alshon in the end zone, and that's the route Foles went. I think, though, that this offense is going to, you know, look more to exploit with scheme. They're going to look to scheme players open. The offensive coaching staff is going to look to put Nick Foles in positive situations. They're not going to ask him to throw into tight windows to dispute it. Receivers and contested catch spots. They want Foles throwing to open receivers. So the tight ends are the best spot for that. I think in this offense, they get open the easiest. So I really like Ertz, especially between those two other options. If you're going to pay up, you might go Kittle. If you're going to save a couple hundred, you might go Ebron, and Ertz could get overlooked in between them. But on that Eagles note, one more thing about tight end, Dallas Goedert, their tight end two, he's got four touchdowns on the season. Should have had five because he had a touchdown called back against the Cowboys on the softest offensive pass interference call I've ever seen. In a year of soft calls, like, that may be one of the worst. Let's not go down that rabbit hole because we're trying to keep this segment short. But he should have five touchdowns. That's among the league lead in tight end touchdowns. He's got more. That'd be more than a lot of receivers have this season. So he's a guy that could get schemed open as well. This Andy Reid offensive tree loves using its secondary tight end, getting them open in the red zone. They kind of get ignored in that spot. You get a backup, a linebacker or something like that, who is just a mismatch. Goddard is almost as good of an athlete as Ertz. He's big, he's fast, he can get open, he's physical. So that's in a tournament lineup, 2,600. It's a great spot to pay down, open up salary for a lot of the other spots, and pay up at a couple other spots, running back primarily. But that's what I got this week, guys. Hit me back with feedback, whether you like the segment, if you think I'm using decisions that are key decisions. For me, they were. If there's certain decisions you want to see next week, I'm hoping to turn this into a regular thing. So hit me on Twitter at @Roto_Wan, WAN. You can get me at the same in the Lineup Logic Slack chat. If you are not a Lineup Logic subscriber, consider it. Go to patreon.com/lineuplogic. $10 a month gets you tools, cheat sheets, access to, you know, folks like myself, Spectre, Quafo, Jeremy Lopez, who handles the tools. It's a really affordable amount of money to help you get your process in the right place. If you're just kind of out there floating and you've had a bad DFS season, think about it, give it a shot. It's a month-to-month commitment. You don't like it, cut it next month, but you'll like it, almost sure of it. I hope you guys have a great week.